guest growl, Momo. Let's go. Let's go. Lots happening, and we got a full show today, and we're going to try and get it all in. And we're going to start with Ramona. Did you watch any of the Laker game last night?
A bit, and then I turned it off. That's all I needed to say.
Yeah, it is somewhat
ugly.
Okay, I want to speak directly to all Laker fans. I want to, because I'm getting a lot of worry. I'm getting a lot of, oh no, the sky is falling. All right? Everybody relax. Okay? Everybody relax. This is expected. This isn't surprising. When you lose, take the two best players, Ramona, off of any team in the league. Take Paul George and Kawhi Leonard off of the Clippers. You know, take Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum off of the Celtics. Take Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo off of the Heat. That team's not winning, all right?
Yeah.
Now, it's not that these guys aren't trying. They're trying their hardest. But the Lakers are built around LeBron and AD. And you don't have to take it from me. Here's Kyle Kuzma after the game last night. And he got... Laker fans should stop killing these guys that are trying because they're doing the best they can. Here's Kuz after the game.
I mean, yeah, you gotta be realistic. You know, when you don't have obviously Anthony out here, which is, you know, our primary offensive player, essentially number one option, who we look at, and then having Bron out is tough because, you know, that's, you know, someone that makes shots, communicates on defense all the time, a true playmaker. So, you know, it's a challenge, but you know, it's not nothing that we can't overcome. So I think, you know, we just got to continue to look at the drawing board and continue just to trust each other and try to play for one another on both sides of the ball. And I think that if we can do that, you know, we can give ourselves a chance every single night. That's the challenge we're up against. And, you know, just got to strap it up and go.
So, Ramona, that's what he's right. That's what they're up against. They got to keep themselves in games and then hope that they can steal him at the end. The problem is that the other team probably has their best player who can make play. That's why LeBron and AD are so invaluable, is when the games are close. I used to use as a verb, I used to say, well, the Lakers are going to keep this close, and then they'll just Kobe the game. Because Kobe would take over in the last 3 minutes, and they would win it. And that's what LeBron and AD do. So if you're a Laker fan, you can't go into these games expecting that they're going to play great without LeBron and AD. It's really, really hard.
Yeah, especially when you don't really have a lot of time to adjust or come up with a totally different way of playing, right? It's not so much like, okay, everybody, you know, now it's your time to shine. I mean, generally speaking, John, I have this rule in the NBA where if you're good enough to be in the NBA, you can probably go out there if they give you enough minutes and score 20 points.
Right.
I think just any role player at the end of the bench is probably good enough to score 20 points. If they get enough minutes, it's just a question of who do you give those minutes to and who do you want scoring those points. But the problem is when you lose your top two players and you don't have a lot of time to reinvent the system and the scheme and how you're playing, it's a little uneven. I mean, you know, right now I think Dennis Schroeder should probably be their leading scorer. He's probably the most offensive player that they have right now. You can get a lot more. You can get a lot more probably out of Markieff, you know, or Kuzma. Kuzma could score, you know.
Right,
They could
but
depend
Momo,
on those
here's
guys.
The difference. Here's the difference. In the NBA, okay, like Frank Vogel is an elite defensive coach. Before LeBron and AD got hurt, really only before LeBron got hurt, they were the number one defensive efficiency team in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
This is why people undervalue LeBron. He is so important on both ends of the floor. When he's there, he's like a safety net, man. I'm telling you, like if a play breaks down offensively, just throw it to LeBron with 10 seconds or 5 seconds to go on the shot clock, and he'll create something. And he does that on defense, too. He kind of quarterbacks the defense. And so, in the NBA, the most simple way I can explain this is almost every team has a player who commands a double team. He's so good that you can't guard him one-on-one. And that was the point you were making, that any player who makes it to the NBA has that offensive skill set. But if you don't have anybody who commands a double team, and right now the Lakers don't, then all the shots that the Lakers are taking, all the shots that Schroeder and Harrell and Kuzma and KCP are taking are not open shots. Those are open shots when LeBron and AD are there because their defender has drifted off to help.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, it's going to be more difficult to make shots. And of course they're going to struggle a little more. And for Laker fans who are despondent and think that the sky is falling, don't let go of the rope. Just hang on to the rope. LeBron and AD are coming back. And when they do, it just clicks back into place. But Ramona, until they do, mm-hmm. it's going to be a legitimate struggle. Somebody said to me, next five games, looking at the next five games, how many do you think the Lakers are going to win? And I'm going to say they're all coin flips. All
who
five
are they playing?
Of them.
Who are the opponents?
All right. So if you look at the way, like on paper, you're going to say, oh, that's an easy win. But nothing is an easy win right now. All right. Tomorrow night is Philadelphia without Embiid. Philadelphia without Embiid is still on paper
still
better
good.
Than the Lakers.
Right.
Okay. But the Lakers could win that game. Cleveland Friday looks like a fair fight.
They've been playing a little better. That'll be interesting after the trade deadline. So you're still on
right.
Cleveland. Okay.
Orlando on Sunday.
Okay. Another one. Let's see who's still on Orlando.
Right.
Yep.
Milwaukee on Wednesday. That's a huge battle.
Yep.
Yeah. And then Sacramento at Sacramento on Friday. And that's the team that beat the Lakers without LeBron and AD right before the All-Star break. And
mm-hmm.
then Ramona, after that, you just go up the hill. Clippers, Raptors, Heat, Nets. You know, all in a row. So it's not going to be easy. And the Lakers may go through a slump. And yes, they may drop in the standings. But I'm not all that worried about it. I think if they get into the playoffs, I'll pick them against anybody. Wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, if LeBron
even if they have
healthy,
to play in the play-in tournament.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I think you'd rather avoid the play-in tournament at all costs.
Of course, but you might not be able to.
Yeah, yeah. And it kind of is what it is. The one thing that's going to happen as if they can get like with the list you read me of the next five games, I see three very winnable games there. You know, Cleveland, Orlando, and Sacramento. Those are very winnable games. It's interesting to see if they get those three games. If they only win, let's say one of those five, then that starts to put pressure on. Does that put pressure on Anthony Davis to come back? Does that put pressure on LeBron to come back?
I don't think so. In either case, I don't think they'll bring those guys back before they're ready. Do you?
I don't. But I don't know if it'll be like a team decision, right? Don't you think it'll be
right.
on the players?
The players might push it.
Yeah. I mean, I think Anthony Davis did that once before where he was kind of pushing himself to get back and then he re-injured it. And then it was like, yeah, let's really not do that again. Let's
right.
really be extra, extra care. Cause you know, from what I understand about it, like, this really is an abundance of caution. This isn't like he's had setbacks or anything like that. Now, you never know. I mean, what's going on with Kevin Durant right now? I mean, I don't know what the deal is with this hamstring injury. It seems like he just continues to be out, right? And you thought
right.
it was going to be a week.
But I was going to ask you about that. So, okay, because Durant has been out this whole time, the Nets have not only survived, but thrived.
Yeah.
Because they have two other stars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know Kyrie's not there right now, but for the most part, Kyrie and Harden have carried the load.
Yeah.
Does that, in your opinion, force the Lakers to go after a third star? In other words, is it an arms race? Do you have to, because Brooklyn has three, do you have to get three?
I don't think so, because I think the Lakers' top two are better than anybody's
too.
Top two. I think, and I also think they think Dennis Schroeder's a star. And I don't disagree with him. I think I don't think he's on the same level as LeBron and AD. Let's not go that far. But Dennis Schroeder's a really good player in this league, and he can be that third guy. I think he has that ability. And he just hasn't really gotten the opportunity to play all that much and shine all that much. But he will now. Right. Like this
right.
Is,
well, all those guys have
son.
A great opportunity here. THT and Kuz and all these dudes.
Yeah.
All right. So last night they gave up 62 points in the paint. Which is a lot. They did it the other night, too. I think they gave up 68. How do you fix that if you're the Lakers?
Well, look, I mean, when they got Montrezl Harrell, you did it with eyes wide open. I mean, he's not a great defensive player, and it doesn't help you that way. But what he can do is they can all do better at rebounding and boxing out, right? Like, if you're giving up that many points in the paint, it's a function of your interior defense, but it's also a function of rebounding, right? You just got to – it doesn't matter how big you are. You can rebound. And so I think that's got to be a point of emphasis.
Yeah, last night Josh Hart got 16 rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, and that's you know, when you talk to coaches about what can you actually fix, right? You can't fix that Anthony Davis and LeBron aren't there. Can't fix that. But you can fix your effort, and rebounding is an effort stat. And I think that'll help with points in the paint. It's just, they just needed a couple of games to play together and figure out a new way of being without these guys, though. I mean, I thought they would beat the Pelicans because Lonzo wasn't there, and Lonzo, to me, is pretty important to what New Orleans does. But, like, you know, New Orleans is – they've got a lot of talent. And so, you know, and I think without the Lakers' top two guys, like, you know, the reason why L.A. wins is because – I don't know of any team in the league who has two players who can match up with either LeBron or AD. I mean, right. Every time you put them out there, it's a mismatch. And it's when you have both of them out there together, now you got two guys on the team where you're wanting to double. So this is going to take a couple of games for them to figure out a new way of being. But I think they can do it. I mean, they have some guys who could score. I mean, Kuzma can definitely score. Schroeder can definitely score. Markieff can score. And they can, those guys can hold it down. It's just going to take a couple of games, and it's good that they have a favorable schedule.
Obviously, I'm just asking you for your opinion. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what they're going to do, but this predicament they're in, that they've now lost three in a row, four in a row, if you count the game where LeBron got hurt.
Yeah, I think you should count it.
And these games aren't really close, mm-hmm. at least not yet. Does this predicament that the Lakers are in change the way Rob and the front office play the trade deadline tomorrow?
Maybe a little bit. Maybe I've heard them be a little more aggressive about just sort of inquiring about players that might move, like all the names that you've heard out there of players who might move. Initially, I think they would have just kind of hung back a little bit more. Now there's a little more sense of urgency about getting some help. The question is really, I thought they were going to be more players in the buyout market rather than the trade market. But, you know, I think they can be a little more aggressive about seeing what's out there, and everything is going to come together.
Okay, explain
in the
to
last...
me something about the buyout market, because I'm curious. That's like we hear all these names mm-hmm. that are rumored to be in the buyout. Like the one you hear all the time is Andre Drummond or Hassan Whiteside or
LaMarcus Aldridge.
Why would let's use Aldridge for an example, just as an example. Spurs are trying to get something for him,
right?
What? How is it to the Spurs' advantage to buy him out? And apply that to anybody else. Apply that to Drummond or to Whiteside
So two things. So let's go with Drummond. Generally speaking, when you do a buyout, you give a little money back to the team.
Like Blake Griffin did.
Yeah. Well, he gave a lot back. Okay.
Yeah. So he wanted his freedom, and I think he had like 30 something million coming, and he gave him like 10 million back.
Yeah. And they, that's quite a bit. Most of the time you don't have to give that much back.
So it's financial. That's why Sacramento or San Antonio.
I think they also, you know, there's something. Do you remember when like Luol Deng was on the Lakers forever and they weren't playing him and he wasn't playing there? And it just gets to become uncomfortable to have somebody around the team that is not a part of the team anymore. When there's been a mutual decision, you know, like let's say Drummond is a good example. I think, you know, they offered him, they said, you know, do you want to be, we want to play Jared Allen more. He's our future. You know, do you still want to be in the rotation? Do you want to play? Would you come off the bench, et cetera? And he was offered all of those opportunities to play. And he was like, I'd rather not. I'd rather just move on. And so they're going to try to trade him up until the last minute. And who knows, maybe they'll find a trade for him and he won't be a buyout guy. I don't think so. I think he'll be a buyout guy. And I actually think the Lakers are in the lead for him. I think it's a very realistic possibility that's who they end up with. But it is, I think it's also a courtesy of like, you know, it's a respect factor for these players. Now there's certain owners who won't do it, like just despite the player or however they feel about how this has gone or the conversations have gone. There's certain owners who will just won't do those buyouts. They'll force the player to give up a lot.
And is that just ego? They don't want to lose.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like, you know, it's become such a common thing now for guys to get bought out.
Boy, I would hope I'd never be like that. If I was an owner, I would only care about my team. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care if the player goes somewhere else. If I don't want him anymore.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm out. But it's weird. Billionaires don't like to lose.
Yeah. So. And I think people also don't like, this idea that it kills their leverage. If they're trying to trade, you know, one of these guys who are going to get bought out, it kind of hurts your leverage because the teams that are interested in them are not going to make much of an offer to go get them if they can just get them in the buyout market. right? I mean, it's what's the incentive to put
or
one of
the player says he won't, like with the case of Oladipo, we've heard he's like, I might not sign a long-term deal unless you trade me to the team of my choice. So
right.
It gets complicated. All right, and we'll obviously, are you part of that trade deadline special on ESPN
tomorrow?
Yeah,
I'll be on there tomorrow. Yeah, I'll be on there with Rachel and
so,
all this.
Yeah, tomorrow's going to be crazy. So, and we'll circle back to the Lakers a little bit later. Bill Orme's going to join us later this hour. Lindsay Theory has a really interesting article about what caused the breakup between Sean McVay and Jared Goff. It dropped today on ESPN.com, so we'll get Lindsay in here. And coming up next, USC and UCLA are both in the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2007. How far can they go? I think one of them can win the whole thing. We'll get into that next. Ramona in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, Mason in Ireland, ESPN LA.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, today it's Momo in Ireland. Mason, shockingly, out again today. The NCAA tournament is resuming this weekend. The games are Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. And UCLA and USC are both still alive. Now, UCLA is going to play Alabama. That's the number two seeded team in the country. Alabama is favored. I think UCLA can beat them if they get big games from a couple of their guys, but that's going to be an uphill battle. I actually think USC, who's the sixth seed, is going to dismantle Oregon. Mm. And I'll circle back to UCLA in a second, but is there any reason? Okay, USC played Oregon earlier in the year. They only played once this year. Mm-hmm. And USC beat them 72-58, beat them by 14. I think Isaiah Mobley, who is the less famous of the Mobley brothers, you know, Evan is supposedly going top three in the draft next year. I think Isaiah is the most improved player in the tournament. I think he's the guy now that the other team has to game plan for. And he was a key player against Kansas. So if they beat Oregon, they run into Gonzaga. And I actually think they match up against Gonzaga. Is it crazy of me to suggest that USC can beat Gonzaga?
Not at all. I mean, look, to me, in college hoops right now, like, Gonzaga has a deep team, but so does USC. They actually have some good veterans on that team. This isn't just like the Mobley brothers and a bunch of dudes. They have some good veterans, and I think that they're a really well-balanced team playing well at the right time. I mean, that's always what you look for when you pick the surprise team that's going to go through and run through the tournament. And top end talent, depth, and veteran leadership. They have all of it. That's the same profile Gonzaga has, but you know, who's to say that the top end, I mean, Jalen Suggs is their big guy. Well, he's picked to be a top three pick too, but you know, it's going to depend on who has the top picks. Right? Depends on what they need. And they're probably going to draft for, you know, based on position. Cause I think there's three guys that really could be.
Oh, we lost Ramona there for a second. Well, the point is that look at the way USC made threes the other night, which was the key part of it. Isaiah Mobley hit 4 of 5. Isaiah White hit 3 of 4. As a team, they hit 11 of 18 three-point shots. And you know, they win by 34. So, you know, they had a game against Arizona State this year, Momo, where they made 3 of 22. But they've had, you know, an occasional great. If they shoot like they did against Kansas, against Gonzaga, they can beat them. Now, I know they have to get past Oregon first, but I actually think that USC's playing its best basketball of the tournament, and I think they can win the whole thing. A lot of people are going to think I'm crazy. It would be they play Sunday, 6:45 against Oregon. And I think if they win that game, it sets up USC Gonzaga on Tuesday. And I may be the only guy in the country that picks USC, but I just think they're peaking at exactly the right time.
Yeah, I just can't. Are you allowed to do that as a Bruin?
Well, I think UCLA could win too. I mean, matter of fact, UCLA is interesting. They, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about how they could have been even better than they are.
Yeah.
This Dashian Nix that they had committed to UCLA was probably going to be the best player on their team. And he went to this new NBA Ignite team, which is basically where kids that don't want to go to college go to get ready to play. But Ramona, had he shown up, and Chris Smith, who was going to be their senior leader, was on that team. Mm-hmm. Had those guys shown up, UCLA might have been a 1 or a 2 seed.
Yep.
Instead, UCLA was an 11 seed. And they were probably a little underseeded. They probably deserved to be a 5 or a 6. But now they're just rolling people. And the one thing about UCLA is they play harder than their opponent almost every game. I mean, you watch the way they move their feet. You watch the way how aggressive they are on defense. I think Mick Cronin is exactly the coach they needed. I said the other day, I'm not sure. What do you think? Do you think they have an NBA player?
Juzang, maybe.
Johnny Juzang can shoot.
Yeah.
But almost everybody in the NBA can shoot.
Yeah.
Jaquez is really, really good. He looks like, but I said yesterday, I think he's more of almost like a Mark Madsen type. That's just,
well, he was an NBA player.
Ball. Yeah. I'm not saying there's, you know, not anybody in that team that can't make it, but they're going to have their hands full with Alabama. But and by the way, okay, so let's map that out. If they beat Alabama, they're probably going to run into Michigan, and Michigan's got some injuries, and then all of a sudden UCLA's back in the Final Four. Now, USC's never played in the championship game. I don't know if anybody's played in the championship game more than UCLA. You know, they've got, you know, so many trips to the Final Four and so many trips to the title game. But in order, by the way, in case you're wondering, in order for UCLA and USC cannot meet in the championship game. They would meet in the national semifinal because USC's coming out of the West and UCLA's coming out of the East. So those two teams would meet, and then they would meet the winner of the other two brackets. But, man, Ramona, wouldn't that be something? You think about all the years you and I spent covering the tournament and all the guys, you know, like my buddy Jim Hill and Fred Rogan and Rob Fukuzaki and all these guys who would marry themselves to a team. There's no L.A. media back there. Nobody.
Ben Bolts is back there.
Right. Well, the Times guys are. But none of the electronic media is back there because of COVID.
Yeah.
And this could be the deepest at UCLA ever.
Jim Hill's going to get on a plane. If they go to the Final Four, you know Jim Hill's going to be there.
It'll be interesting because
I'm going to text him right now. I'm going to find out.
But remember, he hosts that hour-long show after the games on CBS.
True. But there's 5 Jim Hills. You know this, right? He can send Jim
Hill. He's like, what was that movie with Michael Keaton? where they just kept cop a multiplicity?
Yes, totally.
Where they just kept keeping
there's like at least 5 Jim Hills. He's everywhere. He's got it. Like, you send Jim Hill number 4.
Yeah.
To Indianapolis.
Well, I've told this story before. Like, when I first got to L.A. in the mid-90s, I said, all right. So I got a job at KCAL, and I was like the number 3 guy at KCAL. So Gary Cruz was the weekday anchor, and Tom Murray was the other weekday anchor, and I was hired to do the weekends and be the reporter. So my whole act, my whole life, is just somebody gave me a great tip when I was younger. They said, when all else fails, be humble and don't get outworked. So I said, okay, I'm going to be the first guy to every story I get assigned to. If I'm supposed to be there at 9 o'clock, I'll be there at 8 o'clock.
Man, I have never done this, but keep going. I cannot really.
Yes, you are always like right on time or a couple of minutes late.
Oh, I'm always sneaking in right as they're getting going. Yep.
But so my first assignment is like LA Kings Media Day, and I'm supposed to be there at 10 a.m. So I get there at 9. And there's Jim Hill.
Love it.
And I'm like, huh.
Yeah.
So the next day, it's UCLA football practice. And I'm supposed to be there at 1:30. So I get there at 12:30. And there's Jim Hill. And by the third day, it was something to do with the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I get to Dodger Stadium. I go, okay, I'm going to go just out of curiosity. I'm going to go 90 minutes early.
Okay.
So I was supposed to be there at 2 o'clock, got there at 12:30. There's Jim Hill. And so I finally said to him, I go, I'm just never going to beat you to one of these stories, am I?
Uh-huh.
And he looks at me and he goes, no, but the fact that you and I are always the first people here means we're going to get along great. And we did. And then later, CBS bought KCAL, and Jim and I ended up working together for 20 years. And we had a great relationship because we have the same work ethic.
Yep.
And, you know, that's one thing that I will always take from Jim, that I think Jim holds it above all else, that he's never going to get outworked.
Well, I have a fun Jim Hill thing. So one night, remember John Black, the old Lakers PR guy?
Of course.
Like one night we were, you know, he was just, we were all talking to, I think it was like probably like the draft night when we're all there eating the food forever and waiting for the picks, right? It's like hours and hours that you're all sitting around waiting. And we all thought like we were good, you know, we're on top of things, we're staying up on things. And John told all of us, he goes, you know, Jim Hill calls me 5 times a day.
Just, oh, I know.
Anything going on? Anything going on anywhere, yeah, I need to be? Right? Like just always checking in all day long. Like, and you always, you know, because the thing about the way we used to cover the Lakers, you used to, people, this is like pull back the curtain a little bit. You used to call down to the office every morning around 9 or 10 and say, okay, what time's practice today? And like, what time should we show up? And then they would say, okay, practice starts around 10. You should probably get here like, you know, 11, 15, 12. And so some days if you called at 10 and they were having a short practice, you had to like get in the car and be ready to go. Because they might tell you to get there right then. And right, other days it was like, ah, get here on 1 or 2. It kind of makes sense, right? Why would you call 5 times a day just in case something happens? So you could just hop to it and you wouldn't be late. You wouldn't miss anything. I mean, you just.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should tell that story. I remember one time I called John Black and I was checking on a story.
Yeah.
And I forgot to ask him something. So I called him back 10 minutes later and I go, I am so sorry to call you twice. But I have one more question. And he laughed and said, John, if you called me twice every day, you'd be about 8 calls behind Jim Hill.
That's right.
And I thought, that's the bar. Right. That's where you want to meet. Okay. So what happened 2 years ago, Ramona? Now, well, we got to make it 3 because it was 3 mm-hmm. Super Bowls ago. Jared Goff and Sean McVay led the Rams to the Super Bowl. They didn't win it, but they got there. Now Jared Goff's in Detroit. And Matt Stafford is the quarterback of the Rams. And basically, Sean McVay and Jared Goff broke up. It's like when you hear two people get married and you think, wow, they're really happy. And then 2 years later, you hear they're done. How did that happen? Lindsay Theory has done a deep dive on what caused the breakup between Goff and McVay. It dropped on ESPN.com today. Lindsay will join us next. Ramona's in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, today it's Momo in Ireland, Ramona Shelburne in for Mace, and our friend Lindsay Theory's online. Lindsay, how are you? We haven't talked to you in a couple of weeks. How are things going?
Hey, guys. Doing well, thanks.
All right, so I'm fascinated by the story you wrote today on ESPN.com because, as you know, Lindsay, I love gossip, and this has a gossip angle to it. We all talked for months about what has happened between Sean McVay and Jared Goff, because the narrative out there was always one of the reasons they hired McVay is because he's an offensive guru. He's really good with quarterbacks. Look what he did for Kirk Cousins. He's going to get with Jared Goff and it's going to be a happy marriage and they're going to live happily ever after. And lo and behold, 3 years after McVay gets here, they're in the Super Bowl and everybody thinks he's the quarterback whisperer. Jared Goff, he turned him into a real quarterback, and now, less than 3 years later, it's over. So let me start with a simple question. Was there a tipping point? Was there something that happened where Sean said, all right, I can't be married to this guy anymore, or was it over time, like progressive?
Yeah, you know what, to Sean's credit, when we spoke to him last week, you know, I asked him, was there a point in which you lost confidence in Jared Goff? And he said, you know, that's what everyone wants. Everyone wants to like point to a single moment, and it's not like that. And it really, from all of my reporting, I found it really wasn't like that. If you do want to point to something that changed, it really, as wild as it seems, it goes back to Super Bowl 53, right? When that offense just scored 3 points against Bill Belichick and the Patriots, that was kind of the moment things changed, because that's when the rest of the NFL saw a very clear blueprint on how to defend the Rams. And that's when you try and come back the next season and you start pushing and pushing to evolve the offense. And that evolution just really didn't happen at the pace that it needed to. So that, to me, if you want to kind of mark where things went wrong, like that was the beginning of the end right there.
Lenz, one of the things I thought was really insightful in this story was just a lot of it had to do with personality of just, you know, Sean being kind of type A, getting, you know, a little bit more in Jared's face about criticism or talking to him. But the difference between the turnover and quarterbacks coaches that, you know, with Matt LaFleur there and everybody who's kind of
Zach
been in
Taylor
that role,
after
Zach Taylor,
LaFleur,
right?
Yeah.
And then Saffold, there just wasn't as much of a buffer. How did that play into the deterioration of the relationship?
Yeah, that was huge. And something that probably gets underreported, partly my fault, right? Over the last five seasons has really been the amount of turnover Jared's experienced at quarterbacks coach. He had a different quarterbacks coach every year. And really, that season, 2019, is when he had another, was when Shane Waldron was the quarterbacks coach. And so that was the season when the offense needed to come off that Super Bowl loss and kind of evolve. And something happened there where, you know, Jared wasn't making the progress. And so instead of Sean using a quarterback's coach as the buffer to deliver the tough news, he kind of started to become more involved in micromanaging a bit more. And so instead of maintaining what was just kind of a really solid relationship with Jared, it became more of a micromanaged relationship, bypassing the quarterback's coach. So that became a really tough sticking point, and it just kind of devolved from there.
We're talking to Lindsay Theory, who has written a story about why Sean McVay and Jared Goff broke up with the Rams. It's really interesting. We encourage you to read it on ESPN.com. Lindsay, Mason and I always talk about the fact that one of the reasons why we work, we're really different, Mason and I, in almost everything. We have a different opinion on everything. But we're both very naturally energetic. We're kind of bounce off the walls, high energy all the time. Ramona works with us because she's that way. Ramona is. If
really?
Ramona's,
you find me energetic?
Let's put it this way. Lindsay, you've been to parties. You know if Mason, Ramona, and I are at a party. All right. And that's, I would say, and Lindsay, you would know better than me because you spent time with both these guys. I would say that's Sean McVay. Sean McVay he's naturally high energy. And not that there's anything wrong with being low energy or being reserved or laid back. I have a lot of friends that are laid back, but that's Jared Goff. He's more of a laid back guy. You had one quote in the story that addressed this, but I wanted to ask you about it. Do you think that had anything to do with the breakup, that McVay is going 100 miles an hour all the time and Goff is more laid back?
Absolutely. And here's the funny part is that for the first two seasons, that worked so well because McVay would get so excited, right? With everything, with all the plays, the success, you know, he's so excitable and for a very good reason. While Jared would always just, I don't want to say he's a flatliner, but he was very tempered in his emotions.
Which could be good for a quarterback sometimes. Yeah. You don't get rattled. Joe Montana was laid back.
I mean, you don't want the highs to be too high and the lows to be too low. So Jared's demeanor through all the winning was really great because it kind of leveled Sean out. But when you aren't having the success that you expect or want, that's when two personalities like that can have a tough time. And that's really what a lot of my sources pointed to was, you know, as the struggles kind of came on, Sean would continue pressing and pressing and want to figure it out and figure it out. And it's not to say that Jared didn't. Jared did, but he just kind of harbors that emotion in a different way, and that becomes a tough dynamic. And then the whole part of this that really is just kind of the icing on the cake is John Wolford. And
right, that was the most interesting part of this story. Yeah, about that Wolford
John,
came along.
Yeah, well, John Wolford's personality is a lot like Sean McVay's. Those two are very similar. And I know even during the season, Sean was asked, do you like John Wolford because he kind of reminds you of you? And Sean kind of laughed it off, but that's very much the case. And John Wolford is, by many accounts, a terrific, you know, person, and he's energetic and a great football mind. But he's more like Sean McVay than Jared Goff was. So when Sean Wolford kind of got the chance to get put in. You know, the way he prepares, the way he kind of thinks mentally, the way he kind of sees the game, it's very much more how Sean sees it than how Jared saw it. So that really was just kind of the nail in the coffin.
Yeah, I like this. I like this part where you said, you know, Goff certainly put in the work required of most starting NFL quarterbacks, but compared to Wolford, whom some referred to as a baby breeze, it fell short. Quote, just a different animal, a source said. He's addicted like McVay. I mean, it almost seems like you're trying to make a relationship work. You're kind of fighting. You have these, you know, sort of somewhat irreconcilable differences. You can probably get through it if you're winning. You can probably deal with it. But when you start to lose and it's not turning around, and then another guy comes along, right, where there's another option, and this guy's a little more fun and exciting and new. Like, it just felt like McVay moved on. He got tired of it.
That's the easiest way to sum it up. And I thought, you know, in all the reporting, I thought it was really important because there was some reports after Jared was traded that came out that said Jared didn't work hard and Jared didn't And I spoke with many, many people and asked about Jared's work ethic and working hard and putting in the time and putting in the hours. You know, that wasn't an issue. Like, no one says the quarterback needs to be the first and last guy in the weight room. You know, like, it's just every starting quarterback in the NFL has their own way of preparing it and doing it. And that's totally fine. But John Wolford kind of is like that little engine that could type personality. I mean, let's not forget that he's an undrafted free agent. I mean, I personally was a walk-on, right? Like, an undrafted free agent, similar to a walk-on, you always have to be the hardest working person there because you're not there on talent alone, and that's just how it is. So I thought the comparisons that were immediately came out that John and Jared's work ethics were night and day was a little bit, you know, I think it's important to have that in context because naturally the undrafted free agent is always going to put in more time because, frankly, it's to earn his right to be there every single day.
All right, so Lindsay Theory, Ramona, I don't know if you've ever heard us interview Lindsay, but she's been trying to get her wedding done ever since COVID started.
Yeah.
So we always ask for a wedding update. Lindsay, what is the latest on the wedding?
You guys, it's no different. I am so tired of saying it's no different, but, you know, still through the yellow tier, three families up to 10 people. So
10.
Apparently, there's like an entire coalitions now that are out there lobbying for weddings and private gatherings with precautions. I just want to say with precautions to be allowed to have more people. So that guidance is supposed to come out apparently on April 1st. So maintaining tons of hope that more than 10 people will be able to be at our wedding, because that would be great.
So, Ramona, I already told Lindsay that she should send invites to both Mason and I, because I'm the perfect wedding guest. I will send you a gift off your registry and absolutely swear, guarantee on my life that I will RSVP no. I will not show up. You will not have to provide me dinner, and you'll get a nice gift. The problem, though, is if Lindsay invites Mason, Ramona, don't you think he'll show up?
Oh, no, Mason will send. No, he will definitely not show up.
Oh, really?
He will just write you a check. He won't even buy something from your registry.
All right, so keep in mind, Lindsay, what I'm lobbying for is anybody who gets your wedding invite, the right thing to do, unless you get a call from Lindsay personally inviting you, is to send a gift and RSVP no. I'm trying to get you your full allotment of wedding gifts.
Oh, I appreciate it because God knows we've sunk enough money into this wedding that may or may not happen. So that's nice.
All right. I'm sending all my Irish luck your way. And by the way, great story today. Seriously, this was a really fun read and you did a great job on it. So good for you.
So, John, you don't know my
history.
Really
appreciate it.
Wait,
she's like my little sister. OK,
really?
I've been with her older sister at Stanford.
No kidding.
Her older sister was a catcher when I was there and I played outfield. We used to be roommates, and Lindsay was just like a little teenager in the crowd, okay?
Now we work together. The best part of it is that Ramona, I think it was like every Wednesday, Ramona posted a blog on gostanford.com, and for me it was like appointment reading. I'd come home from school and go up on AOL, AOL the dial-up, and go to gostanford.com and read it. So to now call Ramona a coworker is like a dream come true for me. So
there you go.
We're lucky to have Ramona.
Who knew? Yeah. Who knew?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Lindsay. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right. There's Lindsay Theory, and her article is up on ESPN.com. right now. All right, coming up next. Ramona, did you hear this story about the ref getting fired for being caught on a live mic?
Oh, no.
All right, I'll have it for you next. I don't think this guy did anything wrong, and it cost him his job. We'll have that story for you next. Fast Track at the top of the hour. Mason in Ireland, Ramona in for Mace, 710 ESPN. Today it's Momo in Ireland, Ramona Shelburne filling in for Mace. And it is a, Ramona, it is kind of a, an unwritten rule that if you're officiating a game, the good refs, the ones who know what they're doing, kind of manage the game. In other words, I've always said that when Shaq was playing especially, he either got fouled or committed a foul on every play.
Yep.
So the other night, there was an NHL game between Detroit and Nashville. And the referee for that game was a guy named Tim Peel. Now, all the referees in hockey are mic'd up for television.
Mm-hmm.
These teams tend to get physical, Detroit and Nashville. So Peel thought it would be a good idea to call a penalty early to keep both teams in check. This happens a lot in officiating. But the penalty was a little ticky-tack. He was caught telling another ref on his microphone saying, I know it wasn't much, but I wanted to call an effing penalty on Nashville early. I didn't think twice about that because I know what he's doing. I know, but and just so you can hear what it sounded like, Jorge dug it up. Here's Tim Peel talking to his other ref, but he didn't know his mic was on. Hit it, Jorge.
It wasn't much, but I wanted to get a penalty against Nashville early in the...
Okay, so you heard that. Wasn't much, but I wanted to get a penalty on Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the NHL has announced that Tim Peel has been fired immediately. He will never work NHL games now or in the future. Colin Campbell announced it this morning by saying, in part, there is no justification for his comments, no matter the context or its intention, and the NHL will take any and all steps necessary to protect the integrity of our game. I think this is incredibly overzealous on part of the NHL. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a little much. I mean, I get why they're doing it, because you just don't want refs to seem like they have an agenda coming in, like things are predetermined. I mean, you and I both know what he's saying is, I want to keep the game from getting out of control, so we're setting the tone early. I mean, that's what refs do, but you're just like not supposed to acknowledge it. And I think it's like, okay, you could just, they don't need to fire him though. Like you just basically.
And maybe they could quietly bring him back, but it seemed like they were making him a scapegoat for this. I got an email from a friend of mine who's a referee, and I can't give you his name because he still refs.
Yeah.
But here's what he said. I've officiated thousands of basketball games in my life. Tim Peel said what every single official has thought during a game many times. We just either keep it to ourselves or speak about it to our partner at halftime when it's only us in a room. In a basketball game, let's say the foul count is one-sided. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's 6-0. The calls were all 100% correct, and the foul count should be 6-0, if not more. We can look up at the scoreboard and see the count, and we also gear up from the coach who said he's had six called against his and none for him. And if there's a break in the game, refs will get together, and if they're veteran officials, they will say they need to call one against the team with zero fouls. The next time that team comes anywhere close to committing a foul, that's the one that's going to get called. If the fouls were 6-0 against them, there's no way we'd call that foul. But here comes a whistle. Both coaches know it's coming too. And this guy, my friend, is exactly right.
Yeah.
For the NHL to come out, and this is like, shocked. I'm shocked
further.
There's gambling going on here.
Let's take this even further, okay? These refs being mic'd up. I mean, there's a lot of players that I know about the NBA. They have players are mic'd up and coaches are mic'd up, but there's somebody who they don't all go on the broadcast. I mean, there is a feed where the unedited, you know, sounds of the game.
Yeah, somebody
are going
leaked
on,
this. You're
okay?
Right.
Somebody leaks it. But mostly the only stuff that the broadcast can air has been sort of pre-approved by.
Yeah, there's somebody from the league that's sitting there.
That's
You're
sitting
right.
there listening to it saying, okay, we use that, use this, you know, this will be good and juicy. And a couple of years ago, do you remember when the Warriors were playing the Rockets and Steve Kerr was, there was audio of Steve Kerr saying something about Kevin Durant, like Kevin needs to be more aggressive. Or I can't remember what he said, but it was something like, you know, he needs to, he can't just take over there. So, you know, whatever it was.
Right.
And it got through, like, they aired it on the broadcast, and then it became a thing post game, and Steve Kerr got asked about it and stuff. And he was, you know, rightly pretty upset, because that's the exact kind of thing that, you know, this whole thing of miking coaches and players up, it's based on trust. It's based on this idea that, you know, you're going to kind of protect me from something like that happening, right? Of in the heat right. of the moment, in the emotions of the game, coach yells at star player yells at, so, you know, a teammate, whatever, which is literally what happens in every single game. If that gets taken out, if that gets blown up, that quote goes everywhere, like, then it becomes a problem for these coaches and players, and they're not going to let themselves get mic'd up anymore. Like, the whole point of it is to say, we're not going to let this, it's going to be for entertainment only, not for cancel culture.
Yeah, and again, good officials manage a game. Going back to what I said about Shaq, Shaq got fouled every single time he turned to the basket. It's going on now with Joel Embiid. He's so big that the only way the other team can slow him down is to push him a little bit. The refs can't call a foul every single time down the court. They can't do it. So they have to manage the game. And when I was a sideline reporter, I used to sit down courtside, and you've done this, you know, in the playoffs and in the finals, and, you know, when you were working for ESPN Radio, you hear the refs all the time say to players, get your hand out of his back.
Yeah.
And, you know, rather than blow a whistle every time, because the referee knows people are watching on TV and they don't want to see 500 free throws. So when Tim Peel said, I wanted to, two things worked against him. His tone is a little harsh. He uses the F word. Play it one more time, Jorge. Tim Peel getting caught on tape, and this is what got him fired.
It wasn't much, but I wanted to get a penalty against Nashville early.
And you heard his other ref say, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
He wanted to get a penalty against Nashville early so that they were the home team. It was, okay, let's keep this game in check.
Yeah.
Every ref I know has done that. And for the league to come out and say, this is a rogue ref. This guy is ruining our game. There's no place for him in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, NHL. All your other refs are doing it. You going to fire all of them too?
Well, and I guarantee you all the other refs right now are aghast. Like, they're not going to. Why would you allow yourself to get mic'd up now?
Right.
I mean,
well, Phil Jackson used to hate that thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they would mic Phil up because he said he would do it. And I'm friends with all the crew guys.
Yeah.
And the tech would come back to get that mic after the game.
Yeah.
You know, and Phil would often crumple it up and throw it on the floor.
and Allison
would have to go find it.
I don't blame them. I mean, there's a part of me that says, they're there to win a basketball game. And and yes, they are there to entertain, and they're there for the fans, and they're there, you know, they want to make the game entertaining. Understood. They want to help the broadcast be entertaining because you got to sell your game. That's all part of it. But if you want to, you know, we talked about this with The Last Dance, okay? You know, Andy, what's his last name? Andy Thompson, Michael Thompson's brother, okay?
Right.
You know, he was the guy who the Bulls approved to let in and get all that footage from behind the scenes with the Bulls.
Oh, I've talked to him about it. He says that if they were ever allowed the stuff that didn't run, it would be a monster hit.
Yeah, well, it was a monster hit anyway, okay?
Right.
But the truth is, the only person they would have allowed in that locker room was Andy, because they knew he knew how to act.
Yeah.
He knew how to
He was a basketball player.
Yeah, he was a basketball guy. He was Michael's brother. I mean, you know, he's a guy who knows what to, you know, what's okay and what's not. And I know that, you know, there's journalists who will hear this and go, okay, what are you talking about? Or what, you know, like, I get that. We all, it's our job to figure out what's being said. But it feels almost like cheating when it's somebody's allowing a camera in there, or you're mic'd up. Like, you didn't find that out from sources who said what happened in that locker room. They allowed themselves to be mic'd up. But if they knew that was going to be used against them like that, they would never have allowed it.
Right.
Right.
Right. By the way, anybody who works in television, I'm friends with a lot of directors and producers and tape guys. There's a blooper reel showing how you really treated people, and be careful, because it will come out if you try and lie about it. All right. Coming up next, Fast Track. Ramona's got questions for me. I got questions for her. We brought it back. It's a big hit. Fast Track next, 710 ESPN.